Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, we're in verse 276. Pravrittir nopayukta chet. Pravrittir nopayukta chet. Nivritti kopa yujjate. Nivritti kopa yujjate. Bodhahetur nivrittis chet. Bodhahetur nivrittis chet. Bhubutsayam tataitara. Bhubutsayam tataitara. Pravrittihi na upayukta chet, nivrittihi kwa upayujyate. Bodhahetuhu nivrittihi chet, bhubutsayam tata itara. Okay. Pravrittihi, there's two words, pravritti and nivritti. In fact, when in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, Shankara's introduction to it, he says that Bhagavan has two paths. One's a pravritti, means going toward. It's you engaging in action, engaging in things in order to fulfill your desires. It's in the world we have a pravritti, we go toward something, right? We're impelled to go toward something. Nivritti is the opposite, where I'm pulling away from something. You know, and so engaging in the world, I use karma yoga, dharma, all of these type of qualities are taught. If one is active in the world and using and engaging in the world, then you want karma yoga, dharma, that are these type of things in order to engage properly in the world. Nivritti is the path really of sannyasa, where I'm pulling away from the world in the sense that I'm no longer asking the world to make me happy. I'm, in fact, my mind is, in a sense, retreating. It's not really fair to say retreat, even though nivritti has that sense. It's the instead of pursuing, having a pursuit into the world, I'm instead giving up those pursuits for the sake of recognizing my own nature, which is the very source of ananda. So we have the pravritti and the nivritti. Pravritti going toward, nivritti going away. Toward, going toward engaging in, nivritti retreating from. So here he says, I'll just tell you the verse and then we'll go back and see, because the verse is building off the previous shlokas. Pravrittihi na upayukta. Pravritti upayukta che. If this pravritti, engaging in action, this pursuit, is not useful, if pravritti is not useful for jnani, then nivritti is not useful either. He says, if the pravritti is not useful, nivritti, kwa upayujate, where is the use of nivritti? If you say, because in the previous verses, they're saying, at least two verses, let me see how many, at least two verses are comparing the karmi, the one who does karma, to the jnani. And they're saying things like, this is their whole attitude. The first one says, the sakshi, the witness that the karmi doesn't know, right? The karmi, the one who's engaged in karma, the one who takes himself or herself to be a karta, a doer, that person doesn't know the nature of the sakshi as Brahman, that the nature of the witness as Brahman. They simply don't know. So it says, that one that the karta, the karmi, the one the doer doesn't know, that sakshi that the doer doesn't know, let the one who knows the truth, let that person recognize that sakshi as Brahman. What difference does it make to the karmi? If the one who takes themselves to be a doer, an enjoyer, to be a person engaged in the world, to be a samsari, does it hurt that person, the karmi, if the tattva bit recognizes the Sakshi to be Brahman. The Sakshi which the Karta doesn't know at all. Right? What's the difference? What does the Karta lose by having this Brahmavit, this knower of Brahman existing? How does their existence, the existence of the Brahmavit, who knows that the Sakshi is Brahman, is limitless, does that in any, is that the Karta, the samsari, lose anything by the existence of that person? What's the loss? What's to be lost? That's kind of rhetorical. Then he says, in the next verse, he says, the body, the speech, the buddhi, all of these have been given up by the jnani. Why? Because he understands they're mithya. It's just translating the verse. He understands they're mithya. So all of the upadis, all of these conditioning adjuncts for the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, he gives all of those up as mithya. In other words, does not have that identification. He says, let the karmi engage with all of these things. Is there anything to be lost but for the jnani? Does the jnani, the one who has self-knowledge, lose anything at all by letting the karmi, the one who takes themselves to be a doer, get totally committed, totally involved in all of this activity? I am the body, I am the mind, I am the sense organs, I am the supadhi, I am doing this, I am doing that. Does all of this engagement that the one who takes themselves to be a karta, does all of this engagement, you know, all this identification, is it a problem? Is it a problem for the jnani that the karta exists? You know? Or is it a problem for the karta, the one who takes themselves to be a doer, that the jnani exists? What difference does it make? Who is hurt by it? Who is hurt in either way? So the idea is, this is nothing to be gained. If somebody who sees any quarrels around this, people quarreling around this, a person who has a buddhi, the buddhiman, the person who has a buddhi and intellect, just simply laughs seeing all of this type of debate. So Vidyaranya obviously had experience with debates and arguments between, you know, the Mimamsas are the first part of the ones who are committed to the first portion of the Vedas and who are very committed to ritual and Dharma and doing all of these things and takes themselves very much to be a karta. And then there's the Vedantins, you know, who are the last, the Jnanakanda, the last part of the Vedas based on the Upanishads, who recognize themselves as Brahman. So in India, you know, there's a lot of debate goes on between all of the different darshanas, all of the different schools. And so people can get very engaged in these debates. Mm. And Vidyaranya is just standing there. You know, what difference does this make? Why are you getting so upset, you know, over these different positions? It makes no difference at all. Nobody's losing anything. Don't worry about it. Mm. So now he's going on to say something a little differently. He says, now, for the jnani, for the one who has self-knowledge, recognizes I am Brahman. That means I recognize that this self that I am is actually free of both nivritti and pravritti. In other words, the Atma is not a karta. The Atma, the self, is not a doer. It's pure, limitless, conscious being. This me that you are isn't going toward or away from anything, right? It doesn't have pravritti or nivritti. And so if I'm just being myself, or if myself is aparoksha to me, aparoksha means it's obvious, it's self-evident. Do I think of myself in terms of pravritti or nivritti? Do I think of the Atma going towards something? Or am I worried about the Atma going towards something? Or do I think it should be going away from something? This pravritti nivritti, pursuing and withdrawal, belongs to samsara, right? That belongs to duality. That belongs to the upadis. It has nothing to do with myself, the Atma. So he says, what he says here, so he starts, he says, pravritti, if pravritti is not useful, what, because we think of the karmi as somebody who has pravritti, who's engaged in the world, right? The jnani will think of the karta, the one who has doership, as being having pravritti. They're engaged in the world, fulfilling their desires, so they have pravritti. So the jnani will say, you know, I don't have anything to do with pravritti, it's not useful. You use pravritti, the pravritti that, you know, commitment to the world in order to fulfill your desires, that type of thing. That's not useful. You know, I don't engage in that, in pravritti. But then if you were to say that, if you take that position, then are you saying then that the nivritti is something useful? You know? For the one who knows the self. Neither pravritti or nivritti is useful. Right? Because the self is free of action. So if you're coming from the standpoint of your own being, right, that being is free no matter what you're doing, whether you're coming or going. Let's put it that. You can be coming, you can be going. The Atma is neither coming nor going. And that's where the mind is resting. That's the aparoksha jnanam for the mind. So then he says, then he brings up another idea. He says, bodhahetu nivritti hi chet. If you think that nivritti is the cause for knowledge, bodhahetu nivritti. If you think that nivritti is the cause for knowledge, then he facetiously says, then the other pravritti similarly should be the cause for the desire for knowledge. I know. So let me explain. Let me explain the joke. There's a joke hidden in here. Let me explain the hidden joke. If nivritti means cessation from action, take it like that, where I'm pulling away from all action. Pravritti means I'm pursuing. Let's look at it as pursuit and withdrawal. So if I'm pursuing, that's the pravritti, right? That pursuit is going to lead to nivritti. Take it like this is what I think he means by this. If I'm working out, for instance, if I'm engaged, I'm very busy, I'm engaged in so much activity, what is that going to lead to? Cessation of activity. Why? Because I'm tired. Right? I'm doing so much pravritti, engaged. So then I stop, I rest, that's the nivritti. Okay, so if you think that this stopping is going to result in knowledge, right? Then the engaging will be the desire for knowledge. Do you understand? The engaging, because that engaging is going to lead to nivritti. Being very active is going to lead to a state of just wanting to stop. And that wanting to stop, then that wanting to stop will end up in nivritti. Stopping. Right? Because I'm tired. I'm engaged. That's going to lead to the nivritti. And that if you think that the nivritti is the cause for knowledge, then the pravritti is going to be the desire for knowledge. It'll lead you to that. That's kind of his idea there. It's interesting. But now let me give you the context again. The first part of the Vedas is all about pravritti. Engaging in the world to gain the karma phalas, the fruits of my actions, the things that I want to achieve in order to be happy. That is the pravritti. Nivritti is sannyasa. So I can stay in the world, you know. And this is Arjuna's question. Shouldn't I leave the world? Shouldn't I take sannyasa? Shouldn't I withdraw from the world so that I can gain knowledge? You know, this is his whole question. So, and he says over and over to Krishna, why are you making me stay like this in the world? I want knowledge. I should take sannyasa. I should withdraw from the world, and that will give me knowledge. So that's like saying, oh, nivritti then, this withdrawal from the world, is the cause for your knowledge. Right? So then what is for the pravritti? Right? What do you do with the pravritti? The pravritti itself then should be the cause for the desire for knowledge. Engaging in the world, that should lead you to the desire for knowledge, and then the nivritti itself would be the cause for the knowledge. This is his argument. It's a little on the subtle side. I only see it occasionally as I'm talking. This particular, the logic of this comes and goes, but anyway, as I talk, I can kind of give you the background, right? Between, you have to think of pravritti as staying in the world, fulfilling your karmas, right? All fulfilling your duties, fulfilling your karmas. Nivritti is sannyasa. Okay? So these are the two paths that Bhagavan set out in the Vedas. The first portion of the Vedas takes care of pravritti. Karma yoga, dharma, rituals, duties. It's all handling the pravritti. Second part of the Vedas takes care of the nivritti and is meant for really sannyasa. Sarva karma sannyasa. So if we look at like that, so now if he says, the sannyasi will say, pravritti is not the way. Right? Pravritti is not useful, he says. So then does that mean somehow that nivritti is useful? Pravritti is not useful, then nivritti is useful? Does that mean that nivritti is going to be the cause for knowledge? Right? If it's the cause for knowledge, then what is the pravritti? What is the pravritti? Is that something that the cause for the desire to know? So he's just kind of questioning the whole thing, because in fact this was Arjuna's question, his Arjuna's doubt. I should take sannyasa so that I can gain knowledge. I should withdraw from the world so that I can gain knowledge. Does that mean that you think that the withdrawal itself is the cause for knowledge? And so he's saying, actually, the engagement or the withdrawal, neither is the cause for knowledge. Right? Neither one will lead to knowledge. The only thing that leads to knowledge is knowledge itself. Right? Just think of this. This is kind of a think. If I withdraw from, and this is a notion. It's not a notion that people don't have. The people do have this notion. I withdraw from the world. You know, I withdraw from all of my activity. And I sit. This would be pure nivritti. I withdraw from all activity. I sit in samadhi. Absolute nivritti. I sit in samadhi, making everything quiet. Would that be knowledge? Is that the cause for knowledge? That complete withdrawal from everything? We say no. Actually, it's not the cause for knowledge at all. All that will happen is that in your ignorance, you'll be having a samadhi experience. Right? You'll be having an ignorant experience of samadhi, which means you can be sitting in total absorption and your mind so absorbed in the ananda of the self, that we wouldn't call it that, but just absorbed in the ananda. And then you come out and you say, oh, that was such a wonderful experience. How can I get that again? Right? Experience was there, but in fact, from the standpoint of knowledge, the self experience is here right now, totally, completely. The Atma, the self that you are, is the self that you are. It is aparoksha, it's conscious being. The conscious being that you are is the Brahman that needs to be is Brahman, which needs to be revealed by the Upanishad. The experience is already totally here. Okay, so now say the experience is already totally here. The self-experience, the self-evident experience of my own being, right? And now what do I do? Not knowing that, not thinking of it that way, even though that's the truth of it, I now take my mind into a state of nivritti. I withdraw from the world, I withdraw my sense organs, I withdraw my mind, all nivritti, nivritti, nivritti. And then what happens is that my mind gains an experience of being free, detached from the experiences of the world. And so now my mind has, in a sense, a shanti, shantavritti, one that's not filled with anything, because everything has been withdrawn. And now me, the Atma, which is Brahman, illumines this shantavritti, this vritti, this nivritti, this vritti nivritti, right? This nivritti vritti. Get rid of it. It illumines this modification of a mind which is withdrawn from all duality, right? And so now what happens is that the Atma is illumining this wonderful experience of total nivritti, you know, and then it can describe that experience to you, all about it. But there's still the subject-object relationship between me and the experience that I'm describing. And what do I say about this experience? It's wonderful, it's expansive, I know it's the truth, I want to have it again. So it's the nivritti is just an experience of a extremely shanta vritti with ajnana, with ignorance. There's no knowledge there. Knowledge means I recognize the content of that vritti as the Atman, which is limitless. Otherwise, I'm just having an experience, you know, of a profoundly silent vritti, which in no way gets rid of the ajnana, the ignorance. So he says here, you know, are you saying, if you say that I have no use for nivritti, does that mean that I have no use for the pravritti, does that mean that there's some use for the nivritti? Are you saying that the nivritti is the cause for knowledge? Does that bring about the knowledge? Yeah. If that brings about the knowledge, then what does the pravritti do? Does that bring about the desire for knowledge? In other words, neither of these things have anything at all to do with knowledge, other than providing, in terms of sannyasa and karma yoga, providing a field of experience for you in which is conducive for you to live, to gain the antakarana shuddhi that is required for jnana nishtha. That's all the karma yoga and sannyasa is about. If I decide, or my guru decides that it's best for me as a student to stay in the world, you know, exposing myself to Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, exposing myself to this teaching, staying in the world, doing my karmas, doing all of the activities, all of the things that are required for me, it is best for me to stay in the world and do all of that so that I can neutralize my likes and dislikes. That's what's best for me, because my mind is still active. It still has desires. It wants this and wants that. I have to neutralize all of that. How to do that? Stay in the world with a karma yoga buddhi, with a karma yoga attitude. You know, exposing myself to knowledge. That will help the mind. You know, that staying in the situation will help the mind resolve my likes and dislikes. Or, if your mind has already been doing that, and you've matured out of these likes and dislikes, so that you don't have those needs, you know, if the mind isn't bothering you in this way, then take sannyasa. Then take sannyasa and you just live a life of meditation and study the shastra. You know, and teach. You just do that because your mind isn't anymore bothered by these raga dveshas. So, live a life of sannyasa, and then that becomes, you can just full-time expose yourself to Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, and that's what you do. But if your mind's not ready for that, what happens is you withdraw from all of these things and then the mind doesn't have anything to do, and so you spend all your time sleeping. Eating and sleeping and then going to class and then going home and sleeping because you don't know what to do. You know, you get bored and it doesn't work. You know, your mind's not in that disposition. And so it's, in both cases, Shravana, or doing the Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana for the karma yogi or the one who's taken that lifestyle sannyasa, continues. It's the Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana, the listening, the contemplation, the meditation, the Nididhyasana. That's the means of knowledge. Right? Not the Nivritti or the Pravritti. The Nivritti and Pravritti have nothing to do with your gaining knowledge, per se. They have to do with the Antakarana Shuddhi. So, for the jnani, again, this is also, as we'll see in the next verse, for the jnani, I don't have to run away from the world. You know, it's not about not being afraid to experience in the world, being afraid to experience the world or engage in the world or being a person in the world or to live out my prarabdha. I don't have to run away from the world. Because the Atma, myself, which I've recognized, is aparoksha. It's known to me. It's not a doer. No amount of perception or engagement is going to take myself away from me. And so this fear of pravritti or nivritti, or looking at somebody and saying, oh, they're doing pravritti, they should only be doing nivritti. If they want knowledge, they should take sannyasa and withdraw from the world. These people are just karmis. They're just doing pravritti, engaging in the world. I don't think that's a very good idea. Who's going to say that? A jnani can't say that. A jnani can as much be engaging in the world as sitting in meditation. It makes no difference at all to the Atma. It's not like the jnani starts engaging in the world and the atma becomes a karta. You know, that you're engaging in the world and all of a sudden the atma has become a doer. The atma doesn't become a doer whether you're engaging in the world or whether you're meditating. You're engaging in the world or you're sitting in samadhi. In neither instance is the atma a doer. The atma is neither meditating nor acting. Right? The atma is always free from action. So let's do the next one. It continues on. Buddhas chena bhubhutseta napyasau bhujyate punaha abadhat anivarteta abadhat anivarteta bodho na twanya sadhana bodho na twanya sadhana buddha chet na bhubhutseta na api asau bhujyate punaha abadhat anivarteta bodha natu anyasadhanat. He says, buddha chait na bhubhutseta. This is another comment based upon this kind of argument between the karmi and the jnani. He says, if the one... if a person who knows a buddha, means here a person who knows, if a person who has self-knowledge, he says, if that person should not have a desire to know, right? A person who has knowledge would not have a desire to know. Why? Because they already know. If you have self-knowledge, then you're not going to have a desire to have self-knowledge because you already have it, right? True, that's true. So if a person who has self-knowledge would not have a desire to know, nor also then would he, nor also will he need to know again. In other words, you have knowledge now, right? And so you don't desire to gain knowledge because you have it. Nor is that knowledge going to go away, so you'll have to gain it again. Once you have knowledge, you don't have to gain knowledge again because you have it. And you don't have the desire for it, nor do you have to gain it again, right? Because you have it. So then he says, abadat anuvarteta bodaha natu anyasadana. He says, the knowledge goes on. Once you have knowledge, right? You don't have a desire, you won't have a desire to have knowledge again, nor can you gain it again. The knowledge continues on, bodha anuvarteta, the knowledge continues on, abadat, because unobstructed. Abada means there's nothing getting in the way. Because there's no obstructions, the knowledge continues on, you know, it continues to just remain, the knowledge continues to remain, because there's no obstruction, not because of any other sadhana, like for instance, not because of any other means. Like say, all right, you have knowledge, so you shouldn't have a desire for knowledge again. But the knowledge, you shouldn't have to gain the knowledge again either. The knowledge should remain, right? Because it's unobstructed. It's not that you should have to bring in something else to make that knowledge stay, right? Like say, for instance, this can be in some understandings of yoga. You have to keep bringing the mind into a state of samadhi. You know, you have to keep the practice going, bringing the mind into a state of samadhi. Keep bringing it into samadhi more and more and more and more. Because if you don't, the mind can fall like a bouncing ball. The reason for that is in yoga, in Sankhya yoga, the prakriti which is being brought into that state of samadhi is real. It's a real substance. And so this real substance has to be continually trained, continually held, right? Because it's not so much about removing ignorance. It's removing ignorance that then you practice to hold this real prakriti in position, you know? Mm. And so that you create like an anuvritti that the prakriti keeps falling into the self, falling into the self, you know? Flowing into the self, flowing into the self, flowing into the self. So you have to keep that discipline. of the prakriti going. It's kind of like, you know, if you have a water's going down a river, and you want the river to go this way, you know, you want the water to go off this way, you have to channel it that way, you know. And so you have to keep it moving that way, keep it moving that way, you know. Like keep the current going that way. Because it's real. The water is real, right? Where here, we don't accept that at all. Ajnanam is a very curious substance. It's not bhava. The ignorance is something very, very curious. Even in vyavahara, even in samsara, ajnanam is present until it is removed. In other words, ajnanam, ignorance, exists until it's removed by knowledge. Once it's removed, it's gone. You can't get it back, right? So once the knowledge is completely removed, let's say for now, so just completely removed, then to get that knowledge back is not possible. We use the rope snake example. As long as you see the snake, right? Rope's been mistaken as a snake. The rope ajnanam is there. As long as you see the snake, you are responding to the snake. Right? Because it's there. That's your reality. You're responding to the snake, your emotional life, everything that you do is, you know, around the snake is in reference to the snake, certainly not the rope. The rope is unknown. Okay? But now say, you gain knowledge of the rope. What do you have to do to keep the knowledge of the snake from coming back? You have knowledge of the rope. Do you have to practice? You know, do you have to keep swishing the snake away, swishing the snake away, swishing the snake away until the snake finally decides, you know, it will stay away? That's because the snake isn't real. Really, there is no snake. So now, here, in this occasion, the Atma, yourself, is not the mind. It's not the body. It's not the sense organs. This anyonya adyasa, this superimposition that has taken place, is not real. It's not real. And so when one gains knowledge of yourself, the self that is there is recognized, right? As it is. The viveka, the discrimination is there. You recognize yourself as it is. What's to bring back the identification? That's the idea. What's to bring it back? You can say, well, because of habitual thinking, you know, it will bring it back. So, as long as that habitual thinking is there, shravana manana nididhyasana. Right? That's what needs to be done. But the fact is that the Atma that you are, the self that you are, is not going anywhere. You know, if I gain knowledge, let's look at it like this. If I gain knowledge of this painting, when I leave the room, the painting experience is gone. Right? If I leave the room, the painting experience is gone. Then what do I have to do? I have to remember it. Right? I have to remember that. I could forget it. You know? Because it's not in my experience at all anymore. What about the Atma? What about yourself? If you leave the room, you know, is yourself gone? If you have a thought, is yourself gone? You know? Is there any experience that you can have where yourself is gone? That's the idea. So once the viveka jnanam is there, once the clarity of knowledge is there, what can you do, you know, to get rid of that recognition? That's what he's saying. So if you say, there's nothing to do as long as that knowledge is unobstructed, right? In other words, that clarity is there. See, this is another thing, just because we have this idea of pratibandhika jnanam, so that's why he says abhadat. Because of there being no obstruction, right? That jnanam just continues. So what is the obstruction? Either it's lack of clarity, which means that the knowledge isn't there yet, right? Because there's still ajnanam, there's still doubt, so the knowledge isn't firm, it's not doubt-free. knowledge by very definition has to be doubt-free. Okay. Or there is habitual thinking, but now this habitual thinking where I find my mind behaving in a way that is not an exemplary for Ajnani. You know, it's doing it's subject to habitual thinking and falling into pain, this type of pain or that type of pain. Now this is another question that can be a debatable point. If my mind is having a reaction, say I'm having an emotional reaction because of habitual thinking, does that mean that I am away from my knowledge? In some ways, yeah. Because the habitual reaction is there. But now, this is the thing. When that habitual reaction is there, what is the stance of the buddhi toward the habitual reaction? What is the self-recognition in spite of the habitual reaction? In other words, does my mind go through the habitual reaction and am I aware of the whole mind being mitya and being subject to the habitual reaction and feeling the pain? When the mind is going through the habitual reaction, feeling its pain, does my mind recognize it as mitya, really and truly recognizing it as mitya? And does it recognize myself? Is myself covered by the mitya reaction of the mind? If my being is not covered, if the mityatva is not covered, I have jnana-nishtha. If the mityatva is covered, if the self-recognition is gone, that's paribandhika. That's a problem, right? But otherwise, what I'm saying is that in order for me to have knowledge, the mind has to behave in a certain way, the world has to behave in a certain way, you know? There's all of these conditions, there's conditions. And we would say, no, that isn't true. There aren't any conditions at all. It's either you have knowledge or you don't. Knowledge means you recognize yourself, right? As Satchitananda, it's aparoksha. It's not something that comes, that recognition is not something that comes and goes. Right? The mityatva of your mind doesn't come and go. The mityatva of the world doesn't come and go. If the mitya mind is having a mitya reaction, right? The mitya mind is having a mitya reaction, suffering mitya pain. Or is the mitya mind having a real reaction, suffering real pain? You see what I mean? Does the mityatva or the ishwaratva of the creation, is it displaced? If you have knowledge, if you have jnana-nishtha, it's not displaced. If your mind is subject to habitual thinking, do you have knowledge that the mind is subject to that habitual thinking? Do you know what's going on? Do you know why the habitual thinking is taking place? Do you know why the reaction is taking place? In other words, is the nature of the mind and its habitual thinking and its raga, dvesha, all of these things included in your knowledge or not? Like, for often, it is not included in your knowledge. That's what Swamiji will always make fun of this. It'll be, you know, everything is, I understand everything. This is a Swamiji talking. I understand everything, you know, Swamiji, but, you know, my mind, Swamiji, my mind keeps having these reactions and I keep feeling sorrow. Even though the knowledge, everything is clear, I'm still falling into this sorrow. And when will my mind become really happy, Swamiji? Yeah. You know what? There's nothing wrong with that question in some ways. I mean, I would rather have a happy mind than a sad mind. Mm. But, so that's a nice thing. He could say, yes, of course you'd rather have a happy mind than a sad mind. But what if your knowledge is based upon you having a happy mind or a sad mind? That's the problem. It's not that we would prefer to have a happy mind over a sad mind. That's true. But if having a happy mind means I have knowledge and having a sad mind means I don't, then you don't. See what I mean? Then you don't. Because the mityatva of the mind, the reactions of the mind, and all the different nuances of the mind, the cause and effect of things that belong to the mind, all of that's not mitya to you. And the stability of yourself, the aparoksha, the stability of your mind is not aparoksha. Aparoksha means evident to you. The mind can, as though, take away yourself. That's ajnana. The mind can't take away the self-experience. Whether it's a sad mind or a happy mind, it can't take away the self-experience. And so it can be acting in a way that you would rather have it not act, but you understand why it's acting that way, because you understand the nature of the mind. But even as you understand why it's acting that way, yourself isn't acting that way. Yourself is free and is always the same. See what I mean? And so when knowledge is there, that knowledge continues. You don't need to gain more knowledge. Even if your mind is acting up, you don't need to go gain more knowledge. You just have to pull the mind back. The mind is acting up because of habitual behavior. But the mityatva of it is there. The aparoksha nature of yourself is there. And so then it's just a matter of helping the mind through its difficult time. You know, because when you first gain knowledge, and even as you mature into this knowledge, there's the emotional lifetime of the mind. You know, working through all of its problems, working its way through all of the raga dveshas, you have to be there and help it. All of that work, you know, all of that maturing on the part of the mind is not a statement on your knowledge, unless it is. Right? It's not a statement on your knowledge at all if yourself is there. And if the mityatva buddhi is there, not in a pretend way, but in a real way, then what you do with the mitya mind that is having mitya problems, you give it mitya solutions. You help it. You help it to gain the shanti, the peace, to work with it in the ways that it's having problems. You help, you know? Just like you help others in the world. You clean your house. You do all kinds of things. It doesn't all become satyam because you're cleaning your house or you're driving your car or you're going to work. Nothing becomes satyam, you know. It's all mitya. So what about with your mind? You're working with your mind. It has this problem. It has that problem. You're working with it. You're helping it just like you would help a child or help a friend. It doesn't all of a sudden become satyam because it has some problems that need to be helped. See what I mean? And the Atma, does the Atma all of a sudden, when it's illumining a mind that's sad, does the Atma become sad? You know, and when you're illumining a mind that is peaceful, does the Atma become peaceful? So no, the mind's peaceful, the mind is sad, the mind is agitated, the mind is joyous, the mind is whatever it is. I am always the same. I'm always the same. That's aparoksha. Nobody can do anything about that. Even I can't do anything about it. That's jnana nishtha. You can't make the snake come back. You can remember and you can teach about that snake, but you can't make it come back. And the jnani, once that knowledge is there, you can't make the atma into a doer or an enjoyer. You can't make it into anything other than what it is. Because that knowledge is firm. And even if there's the emotional lag time, it doesn't make any difference. Nothing can negate it. Let's do one more. Na vidya napi tat karyam. Na vidya napi tat karyam. Bodham baditum arhati. Bodham baditum arhati. Puraiva tatvabodhena. Puraiva tatvabodhena. Bharite te ubheyataha. Bharite te ubheyataha. Na avidya na api tatkaryam. Bodham bharitum arhati. Pura eva tatubodhena. Bharite te ubheyataha. He says, Avidya, ignorance nor its effects, neither ignorance nor its effects are capable of negating knowledge. Neither ignorance or its effects are capable of negating knowledge. Because, he says, both of these have been already negated. The avidya and its effects both have already been negated previously by the knowledge of the truth. So once they've been negated as mithya, what can they do? Right? So neither the avidya nor its effects are capable of hurting bodhita, I mean hurting also, of hurting your knowledge. You can't do anything to it. They themselves have been negated, right, by your knowledge. So they've lost their power. They can still exist, but they can't come and do anything to it. They can't negate your knowledge and they can't hurt your knowledge, he says. So let's do one more. Bhaditam drishyatam akshayhi. Bhaditam drishyatam akshayhi. Tena bodho nishakyate. Tena bodho nishakyate. Jivanakurna marajaram. Jivanakurna marajaram. Antihanyat katam ritaha. Antihanyat katam ritaha. Bhaditam drishyatam akshayhi. Tena bodho bodha nishakyate. Jivan akuhu namajaram. Namajaram. Hanti hanyat katam ritaha. He gives an example. He says, first he says, let that which has been negated, the whole creation, let that which has been negated be perceived by your sense organs. This world, it's all been negated as mithya. Let it be seen, let it be experienced by your sense organs. By that, badaha nashakyate, there's no harm. No harm is possible by that. Here you are. Here's this world. It's all been negated as mithya. You're looking at it. So what? What's going to happen? If you're watching a movie, you know, you're watching a movie. All kinds of things are going in the movie. It's mithya. The movie is mithya. Nothing's going to happen. No matter what happens in the movie, nothing is going to happen. So here, in this whole creation, the whole thing has been negated as mithya. Go ahead and experience it. Experience it through your sense organs. It's really okay. Right? Nothing's going to happen. No harm. No harm will come of it. Then he says, here's the example. A rat, akuhu. A rat which is living, jivan akuhu, a living rat, a live rat, na marjaram hanti, can't kill a cat. A living rat, even though it's living, it's not able to kill the cat. Right? Okay? He says, hanyat katam mrtaha, how could it kill it if it's dead? Right? Even a live rat can't kill a cat. How could it kill it if it's dead? Right? So, here, right, this world, even when it's real to you, even when it's real, it can't touch you, the Atma. You think, you may think it does, but it can't do anything. Okay? What to speak of when it's all become mithya? Then what can it do? Nothing. Okay? Let's do one more, because it's one more example. I want to take a minute. Api pashu patastrena. Vidaschena mamarayaha. Vidaschena mamarayaha. Nishpaleshu vitanangaha. Nishpaleshu vitanangaha. Nakshatityatrakaprama. Nakshatityatrakaprama. Api pashu patastrena. Vidha chet na mamara yaha. Nishpala ishu vitana angaha. Nanchati iti atra ka prama. He says, The one who, Yaha Mamada, says, if the one who means the Atma can't be killed, even by the Pashupatra Astra, the Pashupatra Astra is a magical weapon given to Arjuna by Shiva. It will kill anything and everything. Whatever he directs it to, as long as he cites the mantra that goes with it, that weapon, that astra, will not miss its mark. So here he says, if the one who can't be killed isn't killed, even though pierced by this Pashupatra astra, if he can't be killed like that, then what to say of, you know, an unga, a person whose body has been pierced by an arrow which is useless. Nishpala means it can't do its job. It's a useless arrow. So if the Atma can't even be pierced by the most powerful weapon in the universe, right, even can't be killed by that, what to speak of this Maya arrow, this useless, this fruitless arrow, you know? What is the means, by what means of knowledge, how could you say that that person could be killed by that? You can't even be killed. You know, what's the pramana for it? If even the most powerful weapon in the world can't touch the Atma, is the idea. What to say of this, of an issue, of an arrow which has no strength at all, is fruitless. How could that in any way kill the self? So that's his example.
I know.
Now it's even darker. Now there's no chance. No chance. I'm sorry.
Unless we could go for a walk later.
Okay, let's stop here.
Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.